Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
James Bond is coming back to the big screen in cinemas in the UK, and we're hoping to go to every one of the 25 films. Join us as we celebrate the 60th anniversary of our favourite British agents by watching them all in order. We hope you guys are watching them too, so please let us know your thoughts. You can find us on social media at Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, and our podcast is available on iTunes and Spotify, as well as video episodes on YouTube. Simply search for Really 007 Pod. This week, amazingly, Bond went all the way to outer space. This is Moonraker.
From the most exotic locations on Earth, Moonraker will transport you to another world.
Trifle overpowering your scent.
Holly was a warm girl with the right connections.
Could this possibly be the moment for us to pool our resources?
We would be better off working together.
More excitement, more thrills, more spills. And guess who's dropped in for a bite? Jaws is back. From Earth to the most spectacular adventure in space, Moonraker. It's out of this world.
What exactly are you up to here, Drax?
Moonraker 1, liftoff.
Moonraker 2, liftoff.
Moonraker 3, liftoff.
Moonraker 4, liftoff.
We have
liftoff. What's that?
An entire city in space.
James Bond and the treacherous Dr. Goodhead. Despite your efforts, my finely wrought dream approaches its fulfillment.
Thank you.
Here I am at the View Cinema in Leeds, waiting for Harry, Math and Tom, and we're just about to watch Moonraker. And I've got to say, I don't think I've been more excited about watching any other film on the big screen so far. Granted, it might be because I've missed the last two, but I absolutely love this film. This is the film that made me fall in love with James Bond at a young age, basically because it's just so much fun. It's silly, but it knows it's silly. However silly it is, it's very funny, but also it doesn't discount from some utter genius in the set production and in the score from John Barry. Roger is just completely at ease in the performance. For me, I'm looking forward to some of the one lines. I can't wait for hearing Roger to say a woman on the screen. I can't wait to hear the president sweet guy. I cannot wait to hear flight into space as the space station goes up. And I'm just really excited about just having 2 hours of sheer fun. I absolutely adore Moonraker, and I'm just expectant. I just don't think this film's going to disappoint at all. So I'll let you know how it goes later on.
Hi, Sam here. So I'm going to be seeing Moonraker a little bit later. Just some quick thoughts, because I have seen this film at the cinema once 3 years ago, and it was an excellent experience. Cannot praise the experience enough. I don't think I've been in a cinema screening where there's just been so much joy at the end because of Q's spectacular final line. I think his attempt in re-entry, sir. I really hope that at the screening that I'm at tonight that there'll be some reaction to that. I really hope so. Moonraker, it's my third favourite Bond film. Rose quite, you know, a lot in the most recent few years to overtake Spy Who Loved Me as my favourite Moore film. There's just a lot that I think this film gets right, and yeah, it does get over the top. Bond in space, I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, in 1962, I can't believe anyone would ever imagine that this would be the outcome of Bond or where Bond would head to. But I mean, it's teased at You Only Live Twice, you know, also Lewis Gilbert. In terms of where Bond was going in terms of spectacle, I think that's kind of what would end up happening. But I think it's done in a way that at least, you know, doesn't seem really weird. I mean, it's weird, but it's not to the point where it's like, okay, so aliens got involved with James Bond. It was like, okay, this rich guy managed to get a space station up there. He manages to get on the shuttle that is piloted by an actual astronaut. It's not Bond piloting. He's doing what he can do within, you know, the abilities and expertise that he has. What I enjoy about the film is just, I love, you know, the locations in this film, I think, are wonderful. I love that a lot of the different areas that Bond goes to. For me, this feels like more of a holiday film for me. Like, if I've been abroad, you know, I think about the Moonraker soundtrack or think about the locations, because that's just the kind of vibe that I get, which might not be right for some, but for me, I just really like that. The main cast are really solid. I love Lois Charles's Dr. Holly Goodhead. She's probably one of my favourite Bond girls. I just like that. She's just a more improved Anya. And although I think some ADR does Lois Charles's performance a disservice, I think the overall character works for me. Jaws coming back, can't really fault Richard Kiel. I don't love that Jaws turns into what he you know becomes, but I find it so charming anyway. I find the relationship between Jaws and Dolly just so, I mean, this is when the weirdness comes in. It's very weird, but I just think it's very cute as well, and I'm like, okay, well, I mean, we're going to space, we can handle some weird Jaws romance, sure. Hugo Drax, absolutely magnificent. You know, would never have thought of this guy being one of my favorite villains, but as time goes on, I love his tone, I love his sarcasm and his wit. He's so collected. I absolutely love it. I love that he only gets frazzled towards the end of the film and things just aren't going his way, but he's so in control the rest of the film. I think it's a great performance by Michael Lonsdale, although I know I pronounced his name wrong, but I think he's marvelous in this. And just on a side note, you know, Chang for a henchman, he's fine, intimidating. The dogs are probably more of a threat to me, but I mean, Chang does really affect Bond in the centrifuge, so I mean, you know, he does that, and I think that's a memorable thing. And of course his fight and ultimate death is a memorable part too. Corinne Dufour has one of the worst ways to go. I feel for this character, you know, so much. I've written it in my first article for License to Queer. I wrote about the bury your gaze trope and applied that to the Bond girls. For me, I spent a bit of time talking about Corinne Dufour because she's one of those characters who doesn't really do anything. She doesn't do anything evil. Yes, she's working for Hugo Drax, but she's not an evil person. And she mentions her mother, and she just seems too sweet to be part of this. And so for her to be then dressed in white, to be running through this forest, this very kind of like Hammer horror-esque way, with this music just building, being chased by these, you know, ravenous dogs, and to ultimately die in that way, and to hear the bells in Venice ringing when the dogs catch her, I think it's just terrible, but I think it's beautiful as well. It feels out of place, it's a weird mix of themes, but I think that's what Moonraker is, and for some reason that makes it draws me in more. But yeah, I just feel bad for that character, and so to see that again on the big screen, I'm not looking forward to, but I also am, so weird mix there. It's a nice final film for Bernard Lee. Again, he's just got it down to a T, and I really like his sparring and relationship with Roger Moore's Bond, and I like that at this point it's kind of gone down to like a mutual respect, I think, which is great. Q, of course, fantastic, and Moneypenny doesn't have too much to do in this film, just like Spy. But no, all great things to see at the cinema. I'm hoping that I will love it even more, if that's even possible. Nothing beats out Goldfinger and Honor Majesty's for me, but you never know, Moonraker might take it this time. But yeah, looking forward to this. I'm really looking forward to what everyone else says about this, because I think if anyone's not seen it at the cinema before, you will really be surprised. I hope that there's so many positive reactions, because this film is made for the cinema, much like Spy. I think you'll get so much from it. So yeah, I'll see you on the other side.
Hello, this is Gary Kay at the Odeon Cinema in Bath. Just about to go in to see one of the most fun James Bond films of all time, Moonraker. Really looking forward to watching this. I saw it for the first time on the big screen earlier this year at the Prince Charles Cinema in London, and the atmosphere there was absolutely fantastic. So I'm hoping that the audience, which is going to be a lot smaller this evening, is going to be receptive of Roger's humour as well as the audience was in London earlier this year. Most looking forward to the fantastic locations in this film, Rio and Venice, as well as John Barry's fantastic score. I even love the gun barrel music in this film. I just love his arrangement for it. Just looking forward to a couple of hours of really good escapist fun. Speak to you later.
So we're having something a bit different this week. We've got myself, Math and Harry all on the way to the Leeds Kirkstall view, something like that.
That's right.
Just outside Leeds, and we're on our way now, and we're going to meet John Kell there. So to get four of us really 007 boys there will be, well, quite an event. And when we knew that the Bonds were coming back on the big screen, Moonraker was certainly one of the first ones that sprung to my mind, in that, well, yeah, it's one that the love for it has grown perhaps more than any other since we started doing the podcast. And it's a real spectacle. So just to see those big, vast sets, just to see the space element to it, just everything about it smacks of the cinema and John Barry's score. Those are just a few of the beginning things I can think of. But Harry, first of all, you've been to this Leeds view a couple of times, and it's got some nice seats, we hear.
Yeah, you've probably heard John raving about those. He was really taken by the... you can recline in them, basically. You can press a button and lie back as you watch James Bond on the big screen, which is... It is pretty wonderful. It was You Only Live Twice that John and I watched together, where John was particularly wowed by it. And he's... As you're hearing, he's willing to drive all this way again just to encounter them. Well, this, on a slightly sort of separate note, this will be quite special for me, because it's the first one I've seen with Matt and Tom, my two brothers, here. And obviously, Moonraker, amongst many others, is one that we'd watch absolutely loads as children on video and, you know, recorded off the telly, off ITV. But I can't imagine that... I couldn't have imagined, sorry, that we'd see it at the cinema together, Moonraker. So it's quite special, that, because this, obviously we've been seeing them separately, and now this is the first one we're watching together. I'm looking forward to the experience, and also, like you've said, Moonraker's been a massive grower for us. And see, I think for the Bond community, almost to the point where it's not even done ironically or anything like that. It's like an accepted thing that Moonraker is good fun. Moonraker's enjoyable. Moonraker's unique. And slowly, the complaints about space is fizzling away and people are starting to realise that it's so much more than that. And obviously, the space stuff will be wonderful to see on the big screen. But everything before it will just be amazing as well. Obviously, the music that you've mentioned, Tom, but so many incredible scenes in this film. And I do think it's Roger, I know sort of Spy Love Me is seen as his Bond. I think there's something in Moonraker that it's the start of Roger becoming extremely warm and...
Brown.
and just... He's really refined and, I don't know, relaxed... all in a good way, of course. I don't know. It's a really special film, and I think it's a special Roger Moore moment as well. I think him in this film.
Well, it's the first Roger Moore that we've seen. Live and Let Die wasn't it for me and Harry? I think I've seen Man with the Golden Gun, and Math has also seen The Spy Who Loved Me. So we're halfway through the Rogers, which is quite something, and it's gone quite quickly. Math, you saw Spy Who Loved Me. Is this sort of a semi-sequel, do you think, to that?
Yeah, I think so. I think, in many ways, the plots are similar. We've gone to this huge, grand scale. And I don't know, it just really feels like they're throwing everything at it by this point. And also, John Glenn is now back on board as the second unit director. I really can't believe that we're halfway through the Roger Moore... Roger Moore films, because it's just going so quickly. I mean, as Harry says, it's just the films. I love them all so much, but each week I'm like, I can't believe that's the next one. Oh, I can't wait to see it. And being totally honest, Moonraker, I went through a period of not watching it for ages.
Yeah, you didn't have it very high up in you.
No,
you did alright.
No, I didn't.
That
no, I, I. Yeah, but. Having watched it again a couple of times over the last year or so, it just goes up and up, and I love it so much. So this really is going to be a very special evening.
I mean, it could well be the funniest Bond film, I think, possibly. Yeah. The amount of jokes in it and one-liners. Yeah. We actually did... You were on that one, weren't you? The review, Math, or were you not? With Cinema Savvy? Was that just me and John?
I think it was you and John. I was on the Octopussy one.
Right, okay, yeah. So, I mean, that's... John and I have talked about it. I mean, obviously that was about 3 hours long, but it's quite nice to talk about one that we haven't really chatted about in much depth because we haven't done the review yet. So I quite like chatting about those ones, and Moonraker is right up there. And when we had it on video as kids, it was one of the last ones we got on video. But when we did get it on video, we just watched it to death, which was, of course, shows that it was one of the more reasonable ones. And then as you grew older... It was probably far more than The Man with the Golden Gun. It was the one that became known as a bit of a joke and not a proper Bond film, or, he goes to space, so it's silly. And I've always assumed since then that, the critics and any Bond purist, Fleming purist, would hate it since then. But you're right, Harry, I think we've seen over these last couple of years that, I think I said it once, but we've had, we've had lockdown and people are just... want a bit something to cheer them up, maybe a bit more than some gritty thriller type Bond. And Moonraker, how can you not watch it and not have a smile on your face during the whole film? The bits on Earth, which I keep going about, the bits in Venice, the Bondola, we've got that to look forward to, the double taking pigeon, we've got the fight with Chang. I mean, that's pretty funny.
It's such comfortable viewing.
Drax, I'm really looking forward to. Again, he's gone up and up. He's got such great dialogue and lines, and he's perfect for the role, Michelle Lonsdale, whichever one it is. I can't wait to see him and his big speeches. It's just fantastic.
And in his chateau, you've got Ken Adam working his magic again here, on Earth and in space. It's going to be incredible to see it all at size in the cinema.
We've got a few people we've had on the podcast who were involved in the film. So obviously John Glenn is editing and second unit director. We've just interviewed Erka Bachenko, who's one of the Drax beauties, who she was very aware that you either, most people either absolutely love it or absolutely hate it. But I think that's still the case, perhaps, but more people are thinking they love it than hate it these days, aren't they?
I think there are ones now that they might hate more.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah, genuinely, you know, whether it's Dying of the Day or No Time to Die, it's, I think...
Well, there's not enough getting a lot of abuse, isn't it, at the moment, I think.
At the moment, Moonraker, I think, is in a really good place for the fans, and all those that are seeing it at the cinema are... I can't imagine anyone's going to go in to find fault in it and complain. I think everyone going knows they're going to be having a good time and come out beaming, because, you know, it's like a fun romp. But as with all these Roger ones... There are some very serious moments, and
the Centrifuge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And obviously the dog attack and all that.
We had the chat with Paul Weston, the stunt coordinator at the Prince Charles Cinema, and I think he said there, you'll see the video when it comes out, that I think there's one scene in the space station where he shoots himself. So I'm going to be looking out for that one, which does happen. John Autry will tell you it happens quite a lot in films, because you know they're like, oh, I'll do that stunt, and then they'll film a different shot of, you know, the other stunt.
A school photo where, because it was done in two separate stages, you managed to get yourself on both ends.
Dear me. And on that bombshell.
Well, the other thing to mention, of course, is all the stuff in Rio.
Oh yeah.
There are so many parts of this film. Space is the first thing you think. But there are so many locations. All the Amazon stuff is
the Amazon. The pre-title sequence.
And the song.
Yeah, the song is so nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
It'll always feature low down on people's lists, but it's the easy listening run.
Yeah.
It's the
easy viewing, easy listening.
Easy, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Just kick back and relax.
Send you to sleep. This boy.
Get in that recliner.
Yeah. Well, and then a temporary entry. No. Right, we're nearly there, chaps. We will be meeting John any second, and we'll tell you exactly what we thought of Moonraker on the big screen.
Peace and love.
Yeah, sure, we're loving it. Right, see you later, kids.
I didn't think I'm ever going to fly with anyone else.
You're so right, Mr. Bond.
This is where we leave you, Mr. Bond.
A little premature, isn't it?
Enjoy your flight.
Hello there, Chris Caulfield from Nansum in Pendle. On Sundays, when I was a lot younger, I used to go to church. The last 11 weeks on Sunday, I've been on another kind of pilgrimage, hunting down James Bond. This week it was Moonraker. And what a delight this film actually turned out to be. I say that because I have reservations about this film. Watched it on Blu-ray plenty of times, and I've watched it numerous times on television. And I always felt it was sort of like this loaded, derided film that you sort of could never see past the gondola bits and the double-taking pigeon. But actually, in its own merits on a great big screen, it's a cracker of a film. The opening sequence with the parachute chase, it's just really mind-blowing. It looks amazing. You go straight into the miniature use with the space shuttle being stolen. Again, looks absolutely brilliant. Yeah, you forget that these films were made back in 1979, and you can't be comparing modern day stuff. In fact, sometimes you can and think that these actually look better. Drax, I think, is a great villain. Michael Lonsdale is such menace. And the bit at the end, where he's berating Jaws, the entire cinema was just so silent. You could hear a pin drop. Lewis Charles is great as Dr. Goodhead. She's quite a quirky character. Is a decent file and sort of spars with Roger Moore very well. The bit with Corinne Clary in the woods is a scene that's always stuck with me and always feels like it's straight out of a horror film. I think that bit is absolutely brilliant. Going back to the model work with the space stuff, I wanted to see this really quite eagerly because of the space things on the big screen. And I wasn't disappointed. I thought they just looked fabulous. I've come away with a new appreciation for this film. I think it's actually a lot higher in my rankings than it has previously. A lot of it will be to do with having watched it on the big screen, and this is why I think we're so lucky. So anyway, roll on next week, for your eyes only. Can't wait to see what the audience reaction is going to be when Bond's climbing up the cliff.
Again, I'm hoping for one of those pin drop moments, and this is something that I've really enjoyed. You can feel the tension and everything in the actual cinema. You don't get that when you're watching it at home with your mum and dad or your friends or your partners or even on your Todd. It's just something else. Roll on next week. See you later. Bye-bye.
As promised, Sam Rogers gives his thoughts on The Spy Who Loved Me First and then Moonraker.
What an experience that was. I mean, you come back from these cinema viewings and you kind of think, oh, it can't get any better, but seeing The Spy Who Loved Me finally on the big screen, you could go for the first 10 minutes and then leave and you would be happy because the pre-title sequence and the opening titles were just absolutely astounding. The grin that appeared on my face when Bond 77 kicked in and you saw Roger skiing, just remark. You could hear a pin drop when he went over the cliff, and it's the first time since I was probably about five where I felt the tension. I felt that I couldn't look away. Yeah, truly remarkable. And then the title sequence, hearing that song, just so beautiful. During the pre-title at the very beginning, when you have the submarine, hearing all the sounds around, I think that's when surround sound is truly, truly great. Is I actually felt a bit more scared because those sounds were just coming from all over, those of the alarm, hearing what was going on in the red. It just looks fantastic. But yeah, throughout the film, just so many great moments. It's non-stop with this film. It is true that, you know, just there's actually some really beautiful cinematography here, you know, especially of Roger in Cairo. And I just think it's actually a testament to Lewis Gilbert. I don't think many people actually put him as a top-tier Bond director. I think a lot of people will go for a John Glenn, for a Martin Campbell, for Terence Young. I don't think Lewis Gilbert's ever at the very top, but I think for me, I mean, Lewis Gilbert, Peter Hunt, and Guy Hamilton are probably my three favourite Bond directors. They may not have the very, very best in terms of the stories that they have, but how they showcase them, how they present them. Lewis Gilbert is an absolute expert at showcasing such an extraordinary, expansive world. I mean, the fact that he deals with these firstly amazing, beautiful locations. I mean, Egypt and Sardinia are just so, so good. And then to have these massive, massive sets of the Liparis and of Atlantis, just, I can't even explain how good it is. I mean, you're probably going to get tired of me saying it. Of course, it was lovely. All the casts were great. Kurt Jurgens is he's real slimy. He's just terrible, isn't he? A terrible person. The performance is great. Stromberg is just so, like, you do kind of fist pump in the air when Bond shoots him. I don't really care how brutal it is because, you know, Stromberg is willing to do all of what he's doing without any form of remorse or not really caring about any of the innocent people who will be caught in this. He's totally selfish. You know, you see it from the very beginning when he kills his secretary to killing the doctors who work in getting the tracking system up to scratch. Yeah, it's just, he's maybe not the most memorable in the grand scheme of Bond villains, but he does play an excellent part. But I mean, he is overshadowed for me firstly by Naomi, who, although she doesn't have too much screen time, she definitely benefits from the film. She doesn't go out of it in a bad way. She is there just as kind of maybe as a Stromberg assistant and pilot. And I just love her like expressions when she's flying the helicopter. I think it's so funny, and I love the wink. I mean, she's just having fun doing it. So I mean, at least she died doing something that was fun. But no, Jaws absolutely eclipses this film. The absolute standout aside from Roger, I think, in this film, he has such a presence, and how he's utilized in this. You know, he's, you know, even the comedic things that happen. It's not a whole like massive hammer on top of the head bird swirling like thing. He takes everything very serious, even within the comedic moments, and for me that makes it more funnier, and that's why I kind of think he's funnier in The Spy Who Loved Me than Moonraker, because it's not trying as hard to make him funny. It's just kind of, it's more natural, at least it feels more natural for the character. Anya, she's not my favourite, but I do really enjoy the performance. Barbara Bach does what she can with the material that she has and with the acting credentials that she has, let's say. And I can totally believe the, you know, relationship between her and Roger. I don't believe it would ever be a lasting thing. They both understand what their jobs are, and especially for the world powers, that they represent. But yeah, it's always bittersweet at the end because it's such a fun film, and then to have them both leave, I believe, you know, in those separate helicopters at the end whilst Nobody Does It Better plays, it's just beautiful. You know, really, really like it. I'm just trying to think of anything else whilst I can. The Marvelyn Hamlisch score, yeah, again, maybe not the best, but totally fitting for this film. Could not work for any of the other films, in my opinion, but it's just so great. I never tire of Bond 77 in the film, especially because it's just tweaked ever so slightly in the different scenes that it plays. You know, it is faster during the Lotus chase, and it's a bit slower during the ski chase, around a similar tempo when they're underwater as well. And yet also the Journey to Atlantis music, I love that piece as well. Just trying to think, Ken Adam, the sets, my goodness. It's just as such, you know, I think if you're going to be remembered for something like that, to create such memorable sets. You know, I was watching it and all I could think of was Nightfire at one point, because I mean they have two multiplayer levels which are loosely based on the Spy Who Loved Me, an Atlantis level. You know, the fact that I think there's only maybe like 10 multiplayer levels, the fact that two of them are based off the Spy Who Loved Me speaks volumes. And even like the miniatures as well, you know, the miniature for the tanker and the miniature for Atlantis, just, yeah, maybe somewhat obvious nowadays, but I think even on the big screen it holds up like 45 years later. Absolutely excellent. If there's ever any opportunity to watch this in the future, absolutely please go and watch it.
A pity you leave us, such good sport.
Unless you're a pheasant.
Oh, really, Mr. Bond? Take my gun, a stray bird may fly over.
I only stopped to thank you for your hospitality.
A Fraser will get you to the airport in plenty of time. Come now.
I doubt if I'm in your class.
Oh, you're too modest, Mr. Bond. Over there. Missed, Mr. Bond.
Did I? As you said, such good sport.
So I got back from Moonraker a couple of hours ago. I'm actually about to head to bed, but I just wanted to get this in before I forget. It's just a fantastic film. I feel like a broken record at this point. I really do, but every film has just been so amazing to see on the big screen, and these Lewis Gilbert films have just been top notch. I mean, all of his films are within my top 10 anyway. I just think they have such amazing set pieces, just are so well paced. Moonraker could potentially drag, maybe slightly. I think when you realize, oh, we're about to go into space, it could be like, oh no, how long is this going to last for? But I think it's just done perfectly. I really think it runs along fine. I think just based on audience reaction, I love that people laughed at Hugo Drax's, some of his lines. I just thought it was, I think when Freddie Gray, M and Bond are in his office, and he's speaking about British humour, English humour, I think there was some laughs there, which was great. Laughs throughout, actually, and of course the biggest laugh came from, I think, his attempt in re-entry, sir, which, of course, it always gets the audience going, so I'm so glad that it happened. There was one time where I laughed and no one else did, and I felt really awkward about it, which was when Roger says, well, if it was the 69, then you were expecting me, and I was the only one who laughed, and I felt like, I just felt like a child. I don't think there's any real weak links here. I mean, I feel like Manuela is a bit of a wasted character. I think she could have had a larger role or could have done something more, but it just feels like she's in the movie and then she's out of the movie, so that's a bit of a shame. I have to mention Irka Pachenko. Yes, I spoke with her a few weeks ago, so I was more entranced by her this time. Yeah, not so many lines, but I think she's the most prominent Drax girl in the film, I think, alongside Anne Longberg, who plays the woman in the Drax girl who does the tour in Vanini Glass. I think those two are probably the lead ones in there who have the most prominent roles. But of course, Irka Pachenko's Blonde Beauty character has her back and forth with Bond, and then does the whole luring to the pyramid, to the base. And that scene is just gorgeous. I think what's wonderful about this film is that the music and the visuals, the audio and the visuals, they marry up so well. I think especially in the latter half of the film as well, I think everything is just a hit pretty much from, you know, the boat chase onwards. I think the 007 theme is a little bit misplaced, maybe. I mean, I still wouldn't change it because I love having it there, and it's nice to hear it in this era, because the last time it was used was in Diamonds Are Forever. I would still love it if it was used in the future. I would like it in a future Bond film. It evokes a lot of, you know, joy and a lot of, you know, like, fast-paced action, which is when it's generally used. So I'd like to hear that again. But no, just Bond Lord's Pyramid, that track. Flight into Space, of course, it's just one of the best pieces of music in film, I would say. There's Star Wars comparisons, and yeah, of course there is, but I don't think it's so heavy-handed. It's, you know, doesn't have Corinne Dufour in Bond's head going, "Bond, trust your Bond, trust your feelings," or anything like that. But no, before I go on and on and on, Moonraker, fabulous, fabulous film. Great that there was quite a few younger people in the audience today, mostly around my age and their 20s. I'm happy and sad. I'm happy that I've seen such a marvellous film in the cinema. However, we are getting ever closer to the end of Roger's era, and that makes me very sad, but we've still got 3 films to go. Very intrigued about how For Your Eyes Only will be, because it's not one of my favourites. Of course, like almost every single Bond film, I enjoy it and I like it, and I'm a fan of it, but compared to the others, I have it, you know, further down my list. It has some great individual unique set pieces that I enjoy, but as a collective product, I'm not totally on board. However, hoping that a viewing at the cinema will change that. Done all the Bond films, official ones so far, and we're going to keep on going.
Hello, my name is Yvonne Curran, my husband Andy. On Sunday, we went to see James Bond Moonraker at the Liverpool Odeon. Now, this is a film we have on Blu-ray. It was on TV that afternoon. Andy, why did we need to go to see that at the cinema?
Well, Yvonne, it's the only film in the history of cinema that's got a pigeon that does a double take. Really, do you need any other reason to go and see a movie on the big screen?
It's a memorable moment. Is it a step too far for Bond?
You could argue that. But it does follow Bond literally showboating around Venice in a gondola that turns into a hovercraft.
Right. Moonraker is a silly film, but it's a good silly film.
It's a very silly film. It's borderline Austin Powers in places. There's a lot of stuff there that was ripe for cherry picking, yeah, by Mike Myers. That being said, it's a gorgeous film. It is a very cinematic film. Venice looks wonderful. I hadn't realised how good the scenes in Rio were. The scenes of the carnival in Rio really do sort of pop out, both sort of visually and with the sound. The model work in the later scenes, Derek Meddings and his team, the model work for the space station.
As that appears in the light, that, and just gets bigger and bigger.
That scene where it's just the slow reveal with the ominous John Barry score. I defy you to find a better model shot than that. It's what, it's 43 years old?
Yeah.
It still stands up beautifully.
I think it's nice to see a film on the big screen rather than your kind of Sunday afternoon when you were a kid and slightly distracted. And
inevitably, there were always shows on ITV. It's always ad breaks. There's always that sort of thing of, you know, these days everybody's playing on the phones. And
yeah,
there were so many distractions. Just to be taken into the cinema and to completely submerse yourself in this, admittedly very silly, but glorious, glamorous, fantastical world where anything, including a double-taking pigeon.
It's a science fiction film. It's
a very silly science fiction film. But it's got a little bit of something for everybody, you know.
It's got the locations, the girls, the bad guy, the Bond lair.
Yeah, it's special mention to Michael Lonsdale just for, I think, being one of the best Bond villains ever. He's got menace with just a little slight hint of archness, so he sort of can see somewhere, just there's a little glint in his eye, he knows what he's doing with it, but won't sort of go the full sort of comedy routine.
He's evil, but he is very polite and calm. And
it's that calm sinisterness to it that, yeah, even sort of makes cucumber sandwiches and afternoon tea vaguely threatening.
But then you're throwing Jaws, a bit of a fan favourite at the time?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, like, for me, I think Jaws is made to be a little too silly in this, especially the scene at the start. It's a real curate's egg of a movie. You've got one of the best stunts ever at the start with the fight without the parachutes.
Yeah, that's impressive.
On the plane. Like, obviously, you know there's a parachute hidden under the costumes. Mm. And if you look close enough, yes, you can see that. But just the sheer spectacle and the work that went into putting that together, the number of jumps they must have done to get that on screen, the sheer sort of craft of that.
But then it's kind of a little clumsy when he uses his parachute cord and then flaps and...
The music that goes with him trying to pop his bags. Yeah, that almost undoes all the...
There's a lot of kind of stunning moments and then like, why is this scene necessary? Why are they running through the boats in the Amazon and a gondola in Venice?
Yeah. But if you've got to do that, go full throttle with it.
Yeah, if you want to be entertained
and embrace it.
Fun. Yeah.
It's a movie that definitely entertains.
Yeah.
And it's well worth checking out on the cinema.
Now, I'm glad you took me. So I've only ever seen them kind of Sunday afternoons as a kid. So to actually see one all the way through on the big screen with the full sound system. People sniggering at not-so-subtle innuendo.
Yeah, the line at the end, which I'm not going to repeat, but Desmond Llewellyn's last line in the film produced one of the best guffaws I've ever heard from a little old lady sat about three rows behind us, and I'm not entirely sure whether she might have swallowed the false teeth at the same time. I don't know, but it sounded like it from where I was sat.
Yeah. That was good.
Standard CIA equipment. And the CIA placed you with Drax, correct?
Very astute of you, James.
Oh, not really. I have friends in low places.
Could this possibly be the moment for us to pool our resources?
It could have its compensations. Where are you planning on going from here?
I'm not planning on going anywhere.
Oh, I suppose you're right, Holly. We would be better off working together. Détente.
Agreed.
Understanding?
Possibly.
Cooperation?
Maybe.
Trust?
Out of the question.
Hi, it's Patch again. Moonraker. It doesn't have an overly complex or original plot for a Bond film, and it doesn't exactly have as consistent a tonal balance like The Spy Who Loved Me. And there are some very silly elements in this film. Jaws' less serious characterisation and the gondola turning into a hovercraft both come to mind. Nor can you describe it as being science fact like producer Cubby Broccoli so claimed. It is sci-fi. Though maybe spy-fi is perhaps a more preferable term we can apply to it. However, does all that really matter in the end? Suspense of disbelief is something I often consider to be part of the price of admission when you go to see a Bond film, especially one as fantastical as this one. It's like that lyric in You Only Live Twice's theme song, "This dream is for you, so pay the price." And I am always willing to do so for Moonraker, because it is 2 hours of joyous entertainment. It's one of my most rewatched Bond films, along with Octopussy. It's endlessly quotable, funny, and very gorgeous looking, as this cinema viewing helped with enormously. Like with Spy, I consider this to be one where Roger is in his prime as Bond. There's never a dull moment with him, and his mastery of one-liners, charm, as well as being believable in genuine moments of peril like the centrifuge scene. That in particular stood out even more on the big screen, because it almost felt like you were really there with Bond, hanging on for dear life. Roger was so good at what he did, and so very underrated as an actor, as in this scene he proves he can act his socks off without even saying a word. Last time I didn't speak about the supporting cast, but be assured I thought the Bond girls of Spy were excellent, and so too are the ones of Moonraker. Corrine's fate is tragic, and she does fall to Bond's charm very easily, but from the way Corrine Clary plays her role, she still leaves a memorable impression. Yes, Holly Goodhead is pretty much an American version of Anya Massada, and while I prefer Anya on a more personal level as the banter between her and Bond as rival agents from different sides of the Cold War is just a more fun idea, Holly is still a great, strong female character. She's given more opportunities than Anya to fight and prove herself as an equal to Bond. Yes, like with Barbara Bach, there are occasions where Lois Chow's voice does sound slightly flat because of the dubbing. I still very much enjoy her performance though, and she remains one of the film's signature highlights. And Drax? Well, he's actually my second favourite of the Roger Moore-era Bond villains. The only other film that I can recall seeing Michael Lonsdale in is, of course, The Name of the Rose, coincidentally starring Sean Connery. But I'm really fond of how understated his performance is here, which adds to his menace. Again, it's very much true that he's like Stromberg from the previous film in terms of his motivations. But even as someone who likes the latter villain, I agree with many that Drax is the superior villain. I loved hearing one of John Barry's finest soundtracks with this film, so naturally I was anticipating hearing Flight into Space. Boy, was I not prepared for the feeling that gave me. Not just the music, but the atmosphere of the whole scene combined with it. I've seen that sequence countless times over the years, but I never imagined I would have the reaction to it in the cinema that I did. I felt like I was frozen stiff throughout the whole duration of that scene, and I can't recall ever feeling like that in a cinema often. Quite an achievement for a film like Moonraker to pull that off. So overall, Moonraker is the film that demonstrates why I maintain that the world of James Bond is a fantasy, with plenty of room for down-to-earth stories too, of course. Because here's the thing, it knows exactly what kind of film it wants to be, and it doesn't shy away from that. No matter how out of this world many of the ideas are, the fun presentation of them manages to look convincing to a degree. When I saw the spaceships flying across the screen, I didn't think to myself that they were models. At least not constantly. I knew they were, but I was absorbed into it. Such is the magic of Moonraker, and many a fantasy-oriented Bonds like it.
Callum McKelvey was back to give us his thoughts on Moonraker.
I'm probably not the first one to say it, but I do feel that Moonraker is often unfairly maligned as just being the silly one. It is easy to see why. It is definitely the Bond film which feels like it is most aimed towards children and families. Even with the darker moments, the lighter moments really do outweigh those. And the sheer number of toys and merchandise available during the film's original release really show that they did have a younger family audience in mind. But despite that, I still feel like there's an awful lot to love in this film for Bond fans really of all ages and all tastes. So there's the obvious things. Firstly, the sheer scale. It looks incredible. And some of the action scenes are just amazing. The opening skydiving sequence, for example. Yes, you can see the stuntman wearing goggles in some of the shots, but just scale of that and the fact that they were able to do that in 1979 is just, it's a really astonishing and amazing piece of stunt work. Secondly, the casting. Obviously, Michael Lonsdale as Drax is a much-loved villain. And though, personally, I don't quite see the love for him, particularly not when Kurt Jurgens Stromberg feels like he's often dogged upon and viewed as one of the weakest Bond villains. I still think Drax is a great character and he has some fantastic dialogue. I think Richard Kiel as Jaws is really having a lot of fun in this film, and you can see him really kind of relishing this notion of sort of coyote and roadrunner and really sort of having fun with the more comedic aspects. I think Roger is also having a lot of fun with the comedic aspects, and he gets some of his, depending on your taste, best or worst puns of the series thus far. Lois Charles as Dr. Holly Goodhead, I think, is equally excellent. She does some really interesting things, and I think that the character is a slightly interesting take on a Bond girl thus far. However, I will say that she does suffer coming after Barbara Bach. I don't think that's anything to do with her performance. I just don't think that the character really is taken advantage of and is kind of swept up in just the sheer scale of Moonraker and all this near constant sense of action and just the real kind of blockbuster element of the movie. I think that really the character is one of the casualties of that. However, for me, there were two real standouts. The first is, of course, John Barry's score. I think it's one of, certainly, his most sumptuous. I have heard some arguments that it's a little slow and falls flat during some of the action sequences. I can see this, I do understand that, but I think for every moment where it perhaps doesn't quite sell the action, it's so grand and awe-inspiring, particularly during the fantastic model work for the sequences in space. Never really been bothered that perhaps it could have a little bit more of a beat to it during some of the chase sequences. That's never really bothered me too much. The other standout, and perhaps my biggest takeaway from Moonraker, is the sets of Ken Adam. Obviously, Moonraker was his last contribution to the James Bond film series, and whilst I think he's remembered primarily for his larger sets, the volcano from You Only Live Twice and the tanker from Spy Who Loved Me, when you say Ken Adam, those are the two sets that people will perhaps think of first. Despite that, Moonraker, I feel, is him really just letting himself go further than ever before. As such, there isn't one standout set, and every set is fantastic. Drax's control room immediately springs to mind, but also for me, one of my favourites was Radar Jamming Room aboard the space station. Just the design on the floor really sort of, I was like, wow, you know, it captures your eye and your imagination. It really helps sell the scale of this film. Although I think we have some great Bond sets in the films coming up, Ken Adam is one of those heroes of Bond for me. And I think Moonraker is such a good film for him to go out on. And really, I don't know if it's ever recognised as perhaps his finest piece of work for the Bond series.
Hello, I'm Irka Boshenko from Moonraker, and you're listening to Really 007.
Hello, Darren Bithell again, appearing with the tedious inevitability of an unloved season to bring my take on Moonraker. Now, we all know that this film is held with universal distaste, mostly amongst the Fleming purists. Grandiose, literally out of this world, farcical. If The Spy Who Loved Me had the trim of a racing snake, Moonraker is the equivalent of the slimmer of the year making up for lost time via death by chocolate. It's like what real Genesis fans feel about Invisible Touch when compared to The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway or Selling England by the Pound. Well, I'm a real Genesis fan, and I love Invisible Touch. I have a soft spot for Moonraker. It was one of the first Bond films I saw in its entirety on TV, and it was a perfect Bond film to watch for one of my age at that time, before I exposed myself to the sadism and debauchery of Fleming. Even before I watched the film, I was aware of its existence. A friend from infant school had Moonraker discs to put in those red viewfinders that acted like little slide projectors. A primitive VR headset, I suppose. Also, I had the little Corgi Drax helicopter and Moonraker shuttles, which, when I opened the cargo doors, I used as a substitute for one of the ships they used in Space 1999 whenever I wanted to reenact an episode or create one. Gerry Anderson never replied. When I became hooked on Bond, I remember being given a Lone Star Moonraker space gun that fired caps. I loved the smell of the burning afterwards. Yeah, that sounds a bit weird, doesn't it? It was a huge thing, that gun, and I don't know where it is now. I know if I kept it with the box, it would bring a small fortune these days. The main thing that forgives Moonraker is that the producers knew they were making this film, and it turned out to be exactly what they wanted to achieve. At a budget 2.5 times the size of Spy, Moonraker ensured that every penny was spent. Like Spy, the main stars of the film are Ken Adam's sets, using what seems to be every film studio France ever had in producing his wonderful space designs. Also Derek Meddings, who earned an Oscar nomination for his special effects, taking 10 months to complete, using rather tightrope walking style techniques such as winding the film back in the camera to superimpose every separate scene image. Finally, Christopher Wood's script is what keeps this film from drowning in its excesses. Every character has its own memorable line, except yours of course, and every joke worked, even if the odd joke was used in the previous film. Like Diamonds Are Forever, Moonraker set the tone for the remaining more Bond films to come, and that it's all over the place. Within the overall pantomime feel of this film, there are some dark moments, such as the centrifuge scene, Corinne being chased by the dogs, the death of the scientists when exposed to the nerve gas, and Jaws' approach to Manuela when wearing that rather scary costume, all of which were brilliantly reflected by the score of John Barry, making Moonraker one of the most underrated scores of the series. In my opinion, I think this soundtrack is better than Thunderball. Remind me to wear extra clothing when I next attend a Bond gathering in fear of having Rotten Tomatoes chucked in my direction. The return of the 007 theme used during the brilliant boat chase has a more languid, majestic feel about it, reflecting Moore's take on the role as opposed to the urgency of the Ernie Connery performances. Space Suite is up there with You Only Live Twice, and overall, the score is much darker than the film's overall comedic mood, but maybe the disco end version of the theme is a tad on the desperate side. I think it's safe to say that Roger Moore had become very comfortable in the role at this point, in fact too comfortable. And like Spy, there's no real urgency in his performance, he's just cruising along in third gear at most throughout the film, rather like the Bondler. The one scene in which he really gets his chops is the centrifuge scene. You really believe what he's feeling during and after that sequence. I've heard a lot of criticism regarding Lois Charles as Holly Goodhead. Myself, I think she's really good. And the repartee she has with Bond has a kind of Lauren Bacall vibe about it. I believe that James Mason was originally thought to be cast as Hugo Drax, and due to the French co-production, it had to be a French actor to take the role. And in a way, Michael Lonsdale does play Drax in a Mason-esque manner, very laid back, at times droll, but with urgency when required. He's not as menacing as Stromberg, but he has a presence, and has one of the best lines a villain has in the series. No need for a reenactment, I think. Corin Clary's performance as the ill-fated Corin does make you feel for a demise at the jaws of Drax's Dobermans. Toshiro Suga is a great henchman, and brings the edge that wasn't brought by Jaws. I don't mind Jaws' presence in this film. In fact, during the film, the sense of quiet admiration Bond has for him and his repeated attempts towards his life is very humorous, but the relationship with Dolly is of course a step too far, but does result in him later being on Bond's side, which I thought worked. The Bond family are overall served well, maybe apart from Moneypenny, who seems a little short-changed in the last two films. We all know that this is Bernard Lee's last outing as M, and his performance just gives me the feeling that he knew it would be his last. The grumpy boss has now become the more trusting father figure, as though he's saying, you may have tested my patience at the best of times, but you do the job well. Of all the screenings that are taking place to commemorate Bond's 60th anniversary, this has been the screening I've been the most excited about. A, because I've not seen it in the cinema, and B, whether it would stand the test of time in its spectacle. The result? It makes all other Bond films like kitchen sink dramas. The size of the screen at the Odeon Bromborough wasn't the biggest, but it didn't undermine the sheer enormity of its ridiculousness. The pre-title sequence is superb. After the obligatory Kim Fortune appearance in the Lewis Gilbert film was done and dusted, BJ Worth and Jake Lombard take to the stage, making 88 jumps in total to make a sequence which I believe is quite forgotten amongst the Bond pre-titles. Being a victim of the film it's contained in, I suppose, that and the desperate flapping bird impersonation Jaws makes before falling into the big tent. The title sequence is lovely, together with the theme song sung by old Shirl. It's hard to imagine Johnny Mathis singing this, or is it? Kate Bush was in the reckoning to sing the theme also, which I think would have suited her also. It certainly would now. The print of the film was immaculate. The score sounded great, but the mix didn't give the goosebumps, as other previous scores heard in the cinema. Most of the film held up pretty well. The space special effects were beautiful to watch. The space laser battle still sounded and looked spectacular, yet the space sets now look a little dated. The Bondler and the cable car sequence also haven't stood the test of time, yet everything else ticked the boxes. All through this film I shook my head at times, I was moved at times, I was in wonder at times. The child in me was awoken. Despite everything that is wrong about Moonraker, let's face facts. Do I find it more entertaining than Thunderball? Yes. Do I find Moonraker more entertaining than all of the Brosnan films? Yes. Do I find Moonraker better than Casino Royale? Yeah. No, don't be ridiculous. Maybe I'm letting my nostalgia get the better of my objectiveness, but there are no such things as guilty pleasures. Everyone has lapses. One man's Steps is another man's Beatles. Moonraker was meant to be what it is, and it should be liked as such. All the best, guys.
You appear with the tedious inevitability of an unloved season.
I didn't think there were any seasons in space.
As far as you're concerned, only winter. And the treacherous Dr. Goodhead. Despite your efforts, my finely wrought dream approaches its fulfillment.
Your dream, whatever sort of nightmare it is, has no chance, Drax.
Do you think not? We shall see. No doubt you have realized the splendor of my conception. First, a necklace of death about the Earth. 50 globes, each releasing its nerve gas over a designated area, each capable of killing 100 million people. The human race, as you know it, will cease to exist. Then, a rebirth.
a new world.
You see, my dear Bond, we're well able to protect ourselves against all enemies. Allow me to introduce you to the airlock chamber. Observe, Mr. Bond, your route from this world to the next. And you, Dr. Goodhead, your desire to be America's first woman in space will shortly be fulfilled.
Leaving you on your flying stud farm, conceiving your new master of race.
If you like, yes.
And of course, anyone not measuring up to your standards of physical perfection will be exterminated.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Certainly.
Interesting. Most interesting.
Jaws. Expel them. Jaws, you obey me! Expel them!
Hello, this is Gary Kay. Just finished watching Moonraker at the Odeon in Bath and had an absolutely fantastic evening. Such a fun film. Audience was a little bit disappointing in that there wasn't more than about a dozen people in the cinema. There were laughs at times, not that many compared to the London screening. However, Q's line at the end of the film, of course, got a massive laugh. The transfer I thought was excellent. I thought it was one of the best transfers of these vintage screenings of Bond films this year. Certainly up there with the likes of Honor Majesty's Secret Service and Diamonds Are Forever for the not just the clarity and sharpness of the image, but the wonderful vibrant colours as well. Sound was superb as well. Really did show off the excellent sound design of the movie, and John Barry's score, which is one of the most outstanding scores in the entire James Bond series, sounded absolutely superb through the cinema sound system. It was wonderful to hear the 007 theme played again for one final time in the series. Such a wonderful piece of music and such a beautiful, majestic arrangement for the boat chase in Moonraker. One of the things that I absolutely love in Moonraker is the three-way interplay between Desmond Llewellyn's Q, Geoffrey Keane's Minister of Defence, and Bernard Lee's brilliant portrayal of M. Such a shame that Bernard Lee died after this film was made, because the rapport between those three characters is fantastic. Just some wonderful little comic moments, of course, not least of all the final scene with the footage being patched through to the White House and Buckingham Palace, and that immortal Q line. Another regular, of course, is Roger Moore, who's in his fourth film at this stage. Absolutely outstanding in the role. Not only can he play comic moments superbly, but also great in the dramatic sequences as well. As I mentioned last week, I absolutely love Christopher Wood's screenplay for Moonraker and The Spy Who Loved Me. I think that the dialogue is superb in both films. The plotting is so coherent and easy to follow, and there's a decent spy story in Moonraker where Bond is basically following the clues around the globe. Just a wonderfully entertaining film and a story that keeps building and building, and the pace doesn't relent at all. It's just wonderful. It's not too fast paced. It's just a lovely leisurely pace, just continues to keep the audience completely and utterly engrossed and entertained. The set pieces in Moonraker are just so memorable. You've got the fight on top of the cable cars in Rio. Stunt work absolutely fantastic during that particular sequence. You've got the skydiving sequence at the beginning of the film, which is just brilliantly realised. And you just can't replace very great stunt work with CGI effects. The stunt work, when it's done well and the production values are as high as they are in Moonraker, it just looks phenomenal on the screen, particularly when you see it on a large cinema screen. For me, One Moonraker is one of the greatest travelogue Bond films. You've got Bond arriving in Rio de Janeiro on Concorde, and Rio just looks absolutely stunning. You've also got the waterfalls for the boat chase sequence, that region of the jungle, and the temple in the jungle looks so breathtaking and so striking on the cinema screen. Just wonderful locations, and as Venice as well, just a beautiful location. Just going back to Michael Lonsdale's performance as Hugo Drax, thought he is one of the very best villains in the entire Bond series. Love his deadpan delivery with the witty dialogue that he is given. Absolutely superb performance and another great voice as well for a villain. Lewis Child's Holly Goodhead, one of the best written female leads in the Bond series. Another strong female character. A CIA agent who's had NASA training. Very good in a fight based upon her, the way she handles herself in the space station sequences. And also a very good on-screen chemistry with Roger Moore. Certainly one of the most memorable female leads in the Bond series. Another star of the film is most definitely Ken Adams' amazing set designs for Moonraker. His last film in the Bond series, he certainly left the series on a high. The space station interiors, the amount of imagination that's gone into the look of it, it just looks stunning when you see it on the cinema screen. The amount of detail in there as well. Ken Adams' design as well for Drax's mission control centre that's within the jungle, that looked absolutely staggeringly good on the big screen. Also, the cinematography as well throughout the movie really did show off the locations and Ken Adams' set designs to their absolute maximum potential. Some real striking imagery throughout the film. I love the little sequence when Roger walks behind the glass urn, I think it is, his image distorted by the glass. Jean Tournier certainly did an incredible job with the cinematography on the picture. Also had to give credit to the fantastic work that was done by Derek Meddings and his visual effects team. Not surprisingly, they were justly nominated for a visual effects Oscar. Their work was absolutely superb on the film. All of the budget on Moonraker just seems to be up there on the screen. Whether it's getting, you know, the best actors to play the parts, the best set designs possible, the best locations, just superb production values throughout. Particularly impressed with the look of the destruction of the space station at the end of the film. The combination of Ken Adams' fantastic set being destroyed, clever editing into that sequence of Derek Meddings' team's incredible miniature shots. Just looks stunning on the screen. Really has stood the test of time, that sequence, and for my money, much better than CGI when you see tangible model work done as well as that and physical sets rather than green screen. Overall, a fantastic fun evening of such an entertaining film. It's no wonder that Moonraker was number one at the worldwide box office in 1979, beating the likes of Rocky II, Alien, Star Trek The Motion Picture, the first Mad Max film, and Apocalypse Now. So many classic films, so many quality films made that year, and yet cinema audiences wanted to be thoroughly entertained by Moonraker. They certainly were entertained, and they would have left the cinema, as the audience did tonight, with smiles on their faces, because the film was just such an uplifting experience. Very much looking forward to seeing For Your Eyes Only on the big screen next week. Hope that as many of you as possible are getting to see these vintage Bond films on the big screen for the 60th anniversary. Feel very privileged that we're getting the opportunity to see these films. And thanks once again to Ruby 007 for putting out these fantastic podcasts. Hope everyone has a fantastic week and speak to you soon.
For my 13th birthday in 1979... we went on a family trip to the Odeon Leicester Square to see Moonraker. And 43 years later, I'm back in the cinema, not the Leicester Square Odeon this time, to see Moonraker again. Alas, I'm on my own this time, but it's been no less brilliant. I love this film. That pre-title sequence blew my brains when I was 13. I'd never seen anything like it before, and I don't think I have since. It's peak Roger Moore. Moonraker in microcosm in that respect, and it lives up to the hype that where all other Bonds end, Moonraker begins. In 1979, I didn't think they could top the start of The Spy Who Loved Me, but they did in this film. It's pure spectacle, a perfect cocktail of breathtaking stunt work and editing. It looks and feels real because everything you see in it is real. But Moonraker has so much more to add. So much fun and madness and good humour. And it also has its serious moments, like the horror of the Doberman attack in the woods, and Roger Moore's brilliantly understated performance when Bond staggers out of the centrifuge, drawn and wordless, which keep the tone of the film unpredictable and all the more compelling. It's fitting that Bond's most outrageous adventure should belong to Roger Moore, effortlessly taking us all along for the ride. And it is such a ride, with charm and wit. Outer space now belongs to 007.
At least I shall have the pleasure of putting you out of my misery. Desolated Mr. Bond.
Heartbroken, Mr. Drax. Allow me. Take a giant step for mankind.
Right. Having just come out of seeing Moonraker on the big screen with Bob and with Chris.
At the Odeon Derby.
At the Odeon Derby, that's right. I'm having a moment, just trying to remember, because my arse has gone numb, because Odeon seats are too... they're too comfortable. I'll say that now, we'll get it out of the way. They're too comfortable. Bob, opinion, what do you reckon?
From my last viewing, last week, this is 10 times better print. Yet again, I notice, obviously, there's a lot more music tracks than is on the original album.
Right.
And I also did notice, because of the cinema sound system, I did notice a hell of a lot more instruments than what I've ever done, even on the soundtracks.
Wow.
It was definitely a step up from last week. I'm still not convinced that we're seeing him in full widescreen.
Yeah,
but the print was definitely better.
It's not a big screen, is it? I mean, and yet normally, as you say, because it's in widescreen, the screen will open up from the sides, and then the picture will be shown in full. What's happening here is that you are left with a black bar top and bottom.
Yeah.
And it's the same screen as you would normally get.
But the sound was definitely...
Sound
and picture were better than last week.
Yeah, picture quality was magnificent. Yeah. Chris?
I think after tonight I've got a newfound respect for this film.
Yes.
I think that the photography in it is amazing. The colours rich and just made everything sparkle.
Mm.
Special effects. I thought that watching it on the big screen, it might look like Derek Medin's work in Thunderbirds, but no, I think for seeing the limited resources they had at the time, it really stands the test of time. And that opening scene where you see the spaceship on the back of the plane, breathtaking, the way you see the clouds pass by.
Yeah, that's very good.
Amazing. Yeah. Likewise, the scenes with spaceships and space battle at the end, the fact that I knew that those men spinning around screaming were actually action men figures didn't detract from it at all. As you mentioned, the sound of the, like, the whooshing sound as spaceships were chasing after the globes. Mm. I thought it was brilliant. One thing that did strike me about David Medic's work was that it did remind me a little of the scenes with the spacecraft and General Zod in...
Well, yes, in Superman.
Yeah. Not surprising, given that it was David Eddings and his team that did the work on both.
Well, if it ain't broke, don't change it.
And also, that line where Drax goes, "Yours, you obey me." It just reminded me very much of General Zod for a split second, the way he delivered that line.
I would say that in connection with Michael Lonsdale, and again, I've never spotted it before, but so he's had the fight with the pet snake, right? He's dragged out of the water, and he says the line, "You're not a sportsman, why did you call off the encounter with my pet snake?" And his lips aren't moving.
Mm.
Now, I've never noticed it before.
No.
But his lips aren't moving, so it's a dub. Pre-title sequence was magnificent. It looked fabulous. It sounded terrific. As Chris said, you know, we're all very familiar with these films, and we see them on video, we see them on TV. But when you see them on a screen that's much bigger like that, those images of a shuttle launching and pluming salt behind it, as we now know it is, looks brilliant. It absolutely looks spectacular, and it completely works. And the destruction of the space center at the end, you know, is just somebody firing a shotgun into it and shooting it and blowing it up. And those images, they stick with you. They do look fantastic.
They do.
You were very, very impressed with with Jaws, weren't you?
Here we go. I've got a problem with Jaws with this one. All through, but mainly when he gets with the girlfriend.
Yeah.
And the scene that really, really annoys me is where Jaws waves at Jaws. makes me cringe.
It is the strangest thing. See, all his entire purpose has been to kill Bond for the whole thing. And then he waves at him. That's strange. Peculiar way.
I must say that going back to seeing it on the big screen, the scene that knocked me out was the bomb blast area where Bond and Holly are trapped underneath the Moonraker. That looked fabulous. It really did. It really was a real menacing set, that was.
I think there was meant to be a scene, wasn't there, where there was like a board meeting.
Exactly, because she was sat at that table, wasn't she? And then...
But it's, like you say, seeing it on the big screen, that was a great set, which was woefully underused in the final scene.
Yes.
It would have been great
it was.
To have it a bit more like a spectre meeting, kind of, all the members around the table, kind of, wondering what was going to happen. But also, speaking of Jaws, like you said, I think that scene where they're both waving at them, it would, given the era, it would have been more fitting for them to sat in the back of a brown Austin Allegro waving goodbye as they go off on a holiday. Bye-bye. Have a nice time in your rocket ship.
I'd never really thought about the Jaws thing until you mentioned it, and I must say that, you know, it's like Chalk and Cheese, The Spy Who Loved Me, and Moonraker for Jaws.
It's used for comedy effect all the way through,
but I think that the way that, for instance, George broke the fourth wall in on A Majesty's and looked into camera, Jaws should just never speak.
No.
He shouldn't be speaking. He shouldn't be able to speak.
No.
"Well, here's to us." Is a... I don't know. Also, the him plunging a large bottle of Bollinger into his mouth to retrieve... did get it all from behind us, which I thought was entertaining.
Yeah.
But all the gags landing in the same place as well.
Yes,
and I think his attempting re-entry was a big laugh.
That was the biggest laugh of the night, I think.
So that was good to say. Again, good to see the innuendo still there.
I think
there.
From hearing the laughs, I think there were a few people who, would, unlike us, had hardly seen it, or if not seen it at all.
Yeah, I think that family behind us had said, you know, let's go and see a movie that we haven't seen before. And they've all come out and they've all had a good laugh. And they've all had a good time, which is exactly the purpose of the movie.
Yeah, I did think Roger looked good all the way through it. Yeah. He did play the part well.
Yeah, he does. He looks particularly well.
Lois Childs looked very good all the way through as well. She was.
You say all the way through, but what about that dress she wears in Venice? That has not aged well. That,
like, no, it doesn't.
I mean, yes. the black light jumpsuit.
It's a shower curtain she's wearing, isn't it? Yes, it does look a bit so.
But also, when will Roger learn that punching a guy with a gun from metal?
He did it last time. I know. He's had a lot on his mind.
He did it. I think he did it three times, didn't he?
Headbutted him this time as well. Still never learned.
And if you were like 1,000 meters high up above Brazil, what would make you think, oh, well, surely we're better outside
than here? He said that. Yeah. You went, where are they going? They're better inside.
And also, when you see that scene as well, just before, it makes you wonder what. Why does Jaws, apart from the spectacle of seeing him bite through a metal cable, why does he do it? Because then, he's going to go up it anyway.
He's got to then get on the cable car.
Both of the cars are moving it, aren't they? Because after that, there's the scene where they pull alongside.
That's right, they're swinging, yeah. So I'm not quite sure, but the engineering of it, I think you can't afford to read too much into
no,
it.
Remember, science fact...
Not science fiction, as Cubby kept saying. Okay, well, they're prepared to take a few liberties here and there, I think, from an adventure perspective. But overall, excellent.
Really enjoyed it. Looking forward to Fear Eyes Only, come back down to Earth.
Yeah, you're doing Fear Eyes Only. I'm going to do Octopussy, I think, is the next one.
I am doing Fear Eyes Only, and hopefully, if I speak nice to some colleagues, Octopussy as well.
Excellent. Well, that's the answer. And so until next time, we'll bid you a fond adieu. Yeah.
Goodbye.
Here's to us.
Hi all, Tom Donnelly here. Just reflecting on seeing Moonraker on the big screen for the first time. Cards on the Table, it's a film I've seen many times and it's never really been a go-to for me. I've always preferred other films in the Roger Moore era. That said, wow. Seeing it on the big screen, it really is big budget, big Bond experience. It's a film made for the big screen. It's one that sits in the shadow, I think, in some ways rightly, in the shadow of The Spy Who Loved Me, given its prominence and its importance and number of elements in there. But there's certain elements of Moonraker that I think are better than Spy, and parts of it that I really like. Especially, for me, the villain, Drax. I think Michael Lonsdale's portrayal of the character, the interplay between him and Bond throughout the film, just really enjoyable. A different kind of villain to Stromberg, even though they broadly have the same idea. Stromberg with his city 10,000 leagues under the sea, whereas Drax has his flying stud farm in space. I just really enjoy that film and the way that he plays that character. It's another great John Barry score, though I do feel that as a title song it's weak, even though the discoed up version at the end is more enjoyable, but the main title song is very middling and very much Dame Shirley's least favourite, I would think. From a performance point of view, it feels like she phoned it in, really. Compare it to Diamonds or Goldfinger, which are, you know, top five Bond themes, I would say. Moonraker is way, way, way down the list. But what a fun adventure it is. It's fabulous to see on the big screen. It's one of those that I really wanted to see, along with a number of others, because, you know, the first Bond I saw in the cinema was GoldenEye. I've subsequently seen certainly a couple of the Roger Moore ones and the two Daltons in the cinema and a couple of the Connerys, but obviously just really fun seeing all these in this run. I think as a result of seeing Moonraker at the cinema, it's probably gone up in my estimation quite a bit. I say some really, really great elements and really great scenes. I love the shooting scene, and then, you know, the real tenseness of the Doberman chase in the forest, which is genuinely, you know, really genuinely a good scene. Just, as I say, really, really enjoyed it. Looking forward to the next one, For Your Eyes Only, which I think is alongside Live and Let Die and Spy is arguably Roger's strongest. But in Moonraker, he's really, really into the role. He's comfortable. There's a level of confidence in his portrayal. You know, Roger Moore is James Bond by this point. You know, you can't be dismissive of that. Still enjoying it. Good to see it on the big screen, and looking forward to the next ones. Hopefully see you guys for showing in this run. Thanks again, guys. Bye.
It finished dead on 10, and that to me just showed the pacing, and the whole thing was so absolutely perfect, wasn't it? that's the most responsive audience I've been with.
Yeah, they were a good bunch.
And the kids loved it, didn't they?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, it's a comedy, isn't it, mate? It's mainly a comedy.
There were a lot, like you say, there were a few generations of each family all sort of laughing together at the exact right points, but everyone in on the joke, everyone, it was brilliant. Just a great atmosphere and a different kind of bond, obviously, compared to where it all began.
The page of Fleming. Drax.
It is quite a radical departure from, you know, the likes of From Russia with Love, and but you know, audiences change and tastes change, and you know, we've said it many times that one of the brilliant things about the Bond series, film series, is that there's like something for everyone, and it's, you know, there are different genres within the whole series, and I mean, this is just so enjoyable to watch from start to finish, and it's so hard to not enjoy it. I don't know why you would be trying not to enjoy it, but and you could just tell the audience that were in our screening were loving it, and they knew what they'd come for, and that, you know, they got exactly what they wanted.
I think the thing that people say is obviously it goes into space, but it's not like it's sort of a deadly serious film, and then, oh, it just goes into space. Oh, that's ridiculous. The tone is set from the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you, by the time you're literally setting off into space, you've completely gone with it.
I mean,
all the way.
I'd kind of argue going into space might be the most serious.
Yeah,
part,
I guess that's
right. Well,
music-wise and everything.
Yeah,
like that.
Well, it's artistic on another level, isn't it?
And the themes of sort of, you know, the destruction of Earth and this superior race and that.
You're right. Yeah, I don't understand what you mean.
When they launch and you hear Flight into Space, you know, one of the most beautiful pieces of music ever written.
Yeah.
I got shivers all over my body. I really did. It was magnificent.
When it's revealed, that space station, I think.
Oh. It just gets... And her face, reacting to it.
Yeah.
Really.
I'm going to say it. Best 2 hours entertainment I've had this year.
Yeah, I think
I'm
it is. No, it is.
Say that because from minute one, it was just laughing.
Well, you were in it, weren't you, the first minute?
Well, yeah, I was.
John is in the opening title.
please see that. Yeah. He's the guy on the left who hijacks Moonraker.
Yeah, and from minute one, it's just laughing. And it's so silly. Roger, I mean, I've not seen a Roger film since Live and Let Die.
Oh, yeah,
so,
yeah. Slightly different.
Like, he's completely in his element now.
Yeah, he is.
What I love about this one is the locations. I think it's one of my favourite locations in any Bond film. It's the best of Venice in all the Bond films.
Oh, definitely.
And then you've got Rio.
Rio is wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah. And the Amazon, though.
I mean, I think I read it was Guatemala, the double.
Yeah, yeah.
But still, I mean, it's just got that amazing.
Yeah, and you really feel like you're there in each of them.
Yeah.
You know, they capture the culture and, you know,
absolutely.
You just feel like you're stepping into
it. Yeah. And then you go into space. And it's actually space.
Didn't see any computer generated space at all.
Derek Meddings on his A game. Absolutely stunning.
I just want to mention something. This is, I was going to say Bruce Lee, dear me. Bernard Lee's last.
I was thinking that.
It's just the contribution that he's made, and seeing him in each of these films, he's pivotal to the whole
thing. He's brilliant,
thing,
isn't he?
You know,
it's quite a key scene, isn't it? When he backs Bond.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
Defence Minister, absolutely furious.
I know.
He looks unwell in it.
Yeah.
It's a nice bookend to his character because of how he backs Bond, especially considering you've got Golden Gun a couple of times ago.
Shut up.
What
about Jaws, guys? What about...
Well, the audience would love
it. The story arc of...
He
doesn't kill anyone, does he?
No.
It's like Man with the Golden Gun again.
Jaws.
Yeah.
He doesn't kill anyone in this one.
Very good.
Yeah, it's just...
It's scary, though, for the first few bits you see.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a horror film as well, isn't it? The walking down the...
I mean, I'm sure you've thought about this before, noticed this before. How did his girlfriend manage to get a ticket up to...
Yeah.
In the uniform.
Well, she's beautiful.
Yeah,
so.
Because she's the end.
Well,
she'd be all right.
Yeah, but she's not in the same line.
She hasn't got perfect vision, has she?
No, that's true.
No, it's true,
but,
that.
You know, all the people in white, the animals going two by two?
Yeah.
Presumably, they all die.
Yeah, I was wondering.
I've not thought about that before.
Like Urca and all them lot,
Yeah.
Because they're not on... Well, the only the only survivors are the US guys and Jaws and...
Dolly.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but is this... You know, this is like the iconic Jaws costume, isn't it?
Yeah, I keep saying that.
Yeah.
It's not from The Spy Love Me.
Does he wear it a bit in the Egyptian braces?
For the Golden Eye game.
But it's like, you know, when you see him sort of going over the edge of the waterfall from a distance in the boat, you'd know it's Jaws immediately. Obviously, he's big, but then the braces and the white shirt. Yeah.
Twice he does that face, you know, like, oh my word, you know, I'm going to die here.
Can I just mention the pre-title sequence? Skydiving. Oh my word, yes.
It felt like you were up there, didn't it?
Yeah. Ridiculous.
John Glenn?
Yeah, he did all hours and months of filming.
I know, like, there's the Mission Impossible.
Jay Lombard, yeah.
There's the Mission Impossible halo jump, isn't there, and things like that, but it is different. This is...
There's three people in falling out of the plane.
And also, you feel like you also sort of get a sense of... you worry about the cameraman as well.
It
being filmed, capturing these moments. And there's one where... I can't remember. I think it's Jaws... It's coming to Bond from a distance.
Yeah, how is it done?
On the camera.
Where it's still camera-like.
Yeah.
And when he chucks Bond out and the guy goes out with him and everything. But there's comedy in it as well, even in that scene.
Yeah.
It's just brilliant.
Great sound, though.
So good. Yeah. And I think, like, find... Not a contrast. There's an ode to... I remember when I watched Thunderball this time, and especially in the water, and I think I described the underwater scenes as like underwater ballet. I think the space ones are gravity ballet.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
It's that same kind of thing, definitely.
We've had loads of battles up till now. There aren't that many left, maybe, actually.
Laser.
That was the bit we all looked at. The Fleming Foundation.
I think it was the moment when it was like a pan, sorry, not a pan, but a wide shot of both armies coming, sort of floating close together.
It's like, what's his face? Alan Port at the Ian Fleming Foundation.
Yeah, exactly.
He's repairing the Bondler as we speak.
Oh, that was fantastic.
There's so many moments.
But it's one after another, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, John Glenn as well. I think the editing and everything. Yeah. I know he did Spy as well.
Yeah, no,
but
it's brilliant.
Ken Adam.
Ken. There's about five different rooms before you get, you know, in the sort of the Amazon bit, then there's another Amazon bit, then there's another ground bit. Yeah. There's the bit underneath the shuttle going off.
I know, that
was incredible.
In the Amazon, it almost felt like Ken Adam was having a joke with Bond fans, because when Bond arrives in the temple, there's that metal bridge. And you think, you know, this is one of those typical these layers where, you know, they cross over and it sort of propels or ejects someone. And then, you know, Bond doesn't go over it. But Ken Adam's got other ideas. This time that kind of flicks him
Chucks him in.
I always see that metal bridge as an ode to You're on the Twilight.
Yes, that's what I've seen
that time. Bond didn't go to space, but this time it's like, no.
Oh, yeah, of course,
there. We're going there this time.
Yeah. My word. Yeah. But it is, it's those, the three, the Lewis Gilbert trilogy that... Yeah. They're so much fun, aren't they? The spectacle's on another level.
Yeah.
And to have John Barry back as well for this one.
I mean, it's such an... I find it a very interesting score, Moonraker. Flight into Space...
It's beautiful, isn't it?
...is one of the most greatest pieces ever done. But it's very sparse. Like, there's lots of parts where... I mean, especially when you've had something like Hamlish in Spy You Love Me, where everybody... you know, you really
should be dancing here.
Absolutely, and you've got Conti next, which is very similar.
Finally.
And Barry, all right. And this is a very, it's very restrained. This from Barry, you know, he doesn't. So many of the
007 thing.
Yeah, it was very
such
mellow,
a slow score,
very
isn't it?
Slow
That's slower than any.
Yeah, and a bit quieter.
I'm quieter. Yeah.
The space laser battle, you know, what my action music we can have here, like really slow love theme type. No, but it works. Because they're slow, aren't they? They're moving in a sense. Yeah, the music, like when Corin put down, centrifuge music.
Yeah, the snake.
Yeah. When Bond kills those two guys in the lab. It's all his fault, that,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah,
it is. I mean, it's save the world.
Their movements are so familiar. Those two sort of move in sync with each other.
Simon Callow wannabe.
Yeah. Peter Porteous wannabe.
Yeah. Oh, it's just... Brilliant. What a series.
And
the thing is, like
we're on a real run
said,
now.
You know, this is for everyone. They can go from this to Furious Only.
And everyone's fine. Everyone loves it still.
You just go from one mission to the next, having fun every call.
Having a laugh.
Yeah, having a laugh.
Sue me. And how can you not love Moonraker? From minute one, it knows that it's stupid.
I know.
Yeah, it's just great fun.
I think only Roger could. I know we go on about, you know, could you see some different actor in this and maybe Pierce, but this is just, he's so good. I think possibly, you know, it's his best sort of comedy performance, isn't it? He looks unbelievable. Like, his hair is probably the best haircut. The flares
as
well.
There was one moment when he's first getting with Goodhead in the...
Do you kiss your mother with that, man?
Yeah, after, you know, he's been through all the CIA stuff. And they're kissing, and there's so much brushed hair going. And his, like, brushed perfectly, the back hair's brushed.
I was noticing that, you know, obviously his hair, when he's been in the snake pit, it gradually gets drier, and so it's absolutely... It's blonde for a start, and then it's gorgeous.
It's very blonde.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's gradually done. It's not silly. Yeah. It's suddenly got lovely hair. And
it's amazing. You know, he's got three left after this.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is halfway through.
Yeah, yeah.
What a run.
I know.
It's just a joy, isn't it?
It is. It is a joyous film.
And so many great little micro characters in this film.
Yeah, well, go on.
Well, we've got the President Suite.
Yeah.
That man, I just love him.
Yeah.
I just love him.
The security guard at the airport with Jaws.
Oh, yeah.
One of my favourites,
yeah.
The guy on the cable car operates, you know, jumping out
the way with his cigarette as the,
coffin floats under the bridge.
And no one's ever mentioned it. Everyone obviously mentions the guy who's in these three, isn't he? The assistant director, who's got the wine. No one mentions the dog because the pigeon takes over. Dog like squinting. I mean, that's genius. John Glenn. And then the guy, no one mentioned the guy, chucking the cigarette in the. God. There's so many moments like that. Yeah. And then to top that sequence off, you get the guy falling into the river. And absolutely perfect, isn't it? Well, and then Bond's in his gondola.
I think there's a moment, I think it might, it's after the bondola, where, you know, everyone's laughing, everyone's having a good time, and sort of Bond's parading around. The square and it fades out. You know, I'm not sure where he's going or anything. But it fades out. Everyone in the audience is having a great laugh.
Yeah.
But it is pretty amazing how, in the next instant, it cuts straight to Bond snooping around at night, and the audience is completely quiet again. And everyone was watching as he goes, like, hiding behind pillars. And you know, it, like Tom said at the start, the pacing it goes from these, you know, really, it's built up that tension so that when Chan does, you know, go.
There's great spy work, isn't there, in espionage? Yeah, the first start. Because you don't know where it's going, do you? Even unless you knew at the ending.
I think on Arrow, the most laughs were when he's with Corin playing for information. It's just every sentence ended with the word information.
There's got to be a Roger drinking game of information.
It's almost like he was doing it knowing that this is his thing.
Datant is the one that'll. Well, it's in the next one as well.
We've got a date on in that one. Got information in for your eyes.
There's Gogol as well.
There is an octopus there. I'd forgotten, because everyone's like, hang on, he's not in Moonraker, is he? And then, I noticed this is really sad. I was thinking, the Rio Carnival is in February, famously, or January. You know, it is early in the year, so it's not that hot. Well, it is still hot, but then, Gogol, snow in the background.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all worked out.
So down to the
great storytelling.
Yeah, it is, even that's a comedy scene with Gogol.
Absolutely
brilliant.
But then you've got horror scenes like Corinne.
And Jaws as the clown.
That's awful, isn't it? Really terrifying.
Although Jaws, when he just goes off dancing.
I know! He's like, I'd rather do that.
I find it funny for the first time as well that they don't like, then sprint away. They're just like, casually.
Why has no one sort of said, you know, done a Bond theme club? You know, there's obviously this Kiss Kiss Bang Bang club.
Yeah.
And all that. Was that Copacabana club? Oh, they all come out. And then you see the shadows of them dancing.
Oh, yeah, when Bond's going.
Yeah,
on board.
And a cat.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd
noticed. No.
But the big screen.
Yeah, it noticed the cat.
what a great experience that was.
Before we go, next week, we start the John Glenn run, we start the 80s.
Oh, here we go.
I mean, John, is it on the up for you, that film? Are you going to see it?
Of course I want a bloody computer.
There you go.
Yeah.
No,
very, very excited for it.
Yeah.
It's going to be great. Definitely. Yeah.
To see Sid Child in action as well.
Yeah.
And another guest who, by the time you hear this, well, fairly soon.
Max the
Pant. Right, we've loved this, and I'm looking forward to hearing what people think. I think most people again are going to be caught up in the magic.
Could be the most positive review we have.
Could be, yeah.
You can't go and watch it and be like,
yeah, you know what you're going.
That was ridiculous.
I can't believe what I've just seen.
James Bond went into space.
Not to the moon though. It's in the pre-titles though, isn't it? Sorry, the title sequence there, doing the flips and all that.
Oh yeah.
Which got a laugh as well.
Yeah, I find that quite funny.
Right. Great show. See you next week for some absolutely premium Bond again.
Yeah.
Don't wait.
Colonel Scott reports picking up two survivors from the space station. A tall man and a short blonde woman.
Right. Okay. Dr. Goodhead reported their position 20 minutes ago. They're just coming into range of our tracking ship in the Pacific Ocean. We should have audio-visual within a few minutes from the remote onboard TV monitors.
Houston calling Dr. Goodhead. Houston calling. Confirm your position.
As this is the first joint venture between our two countries, I'm having it patched directly to the White House and Buckingham Palace.
Well, I'm sure Her Majesty will be fascinated.
We have audiovisual.
Ah, at last.
My God, what's Bond doing?
I think he's attempting re-entry, sir.
James.
I think it may be time to go home.
Take me around the world one more time.
Why not?
Really, no.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.